Hello and welcome to the call. I'd like to give you a little information about how the call will work and then we'll get started. I'd appreciate it if you are listening in and have any background noise if you would be kind enough to hit the star button and the six button on your phone so we can mute the background noises. At the end, I will take a few questions and at that time I will ask those of you who have questions to please push the star six button again so we'll be able to hear you. So what I will do is simply interview our guest today, who is Sharon DeBartolo Carmack, and she's a certified genealogist. Are you there, Sharon?
I am.
Good. Okay, let's see. For those of you who don't know me, I am Dotsie Briegel, and I'm founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be located at nabbw.com, and also boomerwomenspeak.com, which are the number one sites on major search engines for baby boomer women. I am passionate about educating and empowering my generation of women, which happens to be boomers, and I spend a good part of my time communicating with boomers on and offline. Our sites are proudly sponsored by Me Again Products, which are tried and true products for women at midlife. They can be located at meagainonline.com, and it's interesting because we had a really great testimonial in our forum community about these products recently. So you might just want to visit our sites and click on their ad or just go directly to their site at Me Again Online. We have a few other sponsors. We're also sponsored by SunSuite, and for those who are interested in digestive health, they can be located at plumsmart.net. We're also sponsored by Vanguards, who offers information about the best and worst funds to own now. They offer excellent financial information that will encourage you to live a more financially responsible midlife. And you can also find them on our site by clicking through their ad. And then our other sponsor is Elations, which is a daily drink supplement that offers relief from joint aches and pain. So it's an alternative to taking the big pills. And you can find them at elations.com. If you are not a member of the association, the fee to join is typically $75, but we like to offer those people who are guests of our speaker today a $25 discount. So you can join the association for $50, and all you have to do is email me at dots@nabbw.com. You can also find a link to my contact information on the site. This teleseminar is one of many, and as in many, I mean approximately 50 or more, that have been archived in the member area only on our site at nabbw.com. So all of the past teleseminars are free once a member. We have audios that you can listen to while you're playing on or working online. And then we also offer PDFs, which are the documents that you can just print out on your computer and read pretty much this teleseminar at your convenience. There are also lots of other opportunities through the Association for Education and Empowerment. That's all I really have about the association, so I'd really like to get started by introducing Sharon. She is a certified genealogist and partner in the research firm of Warren Carmack and Associates. Along with specializing in Irish and Italian genealogical research, she offers consulting, writing, and editing services for a variety of nonfiction books, with an emphasis on memoirs, biographies, social histories, family histories, and annotated diaries. Sharon is the author of 16 books, including You Can Write Your Family History and Your Guide to Cemetery Research, as well as hundreds of other articles and columns. She's also a contributing editor for Family Tree Magazine, the host of Roots Books, a talk show that airs on rootstelevision.com, and she teaches personal and family memoir writing classes for writersonlineworkshops.com. So that's pretty exciting. You've got quite a lot going on there, and I would have to say that you would be the expert, in my opinion, after all of that.
Well, thank you, Dotsie. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, I'm happy to have you. And would you be kind enough to share your web address?
Yes, my website is very simple. It's my name. It's www.sharoncarmack.com.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about what's on your site.
Well, my husband and I run a genealogical research business, and so our site is mostly there for client information, but we also have other things on the site, such as a number of articles that I have written for magazines, such as Family Tree Magazine and some of the other genealogical publications. I've put PDFs of those on the site, so people can go and get those at any time. People can also go and look at the books that we've written and we have for sale, and we have an order form there as well. And it basically talks about our services and how genealogical research is done and how we do it as professionals and how we can help people find their ancestors.
So your site in itself is a really good resource for people who are interested in this topic.
Well, I would hope so. There are over 5 million genealogy and family history websites, so we're just kind of one in all of that. But, yeah, we try to make our site as helpful as it can be for people who are looking to start researching their family history, or when they get at a brick wall and they need some help, they can come to us and we can see what we can do.
Okay, and tell us about the books on your site.
Well, I have a number of books. As you said when you were introducing me, I've written 16 books. Not all of them are still in print. However, we still have a lot of copies of those books. The ones that are still in print, such as the one you mentioned, You Can Write Your Family History, is one for both beginners and intermediate and advanced researchers when they're ready to write their family history. So many people realize that gathering names, dates, and places is fun to get started, but it's kind of like, okay, what else is there? Is there something else? And I try to help people put their ancestors into historical perspective and teach them how to do oral history interviews so that they can weave all that information together to write a story of their ancestors' lives rather than just the names, dates, and places.
Right. Okay. Very good.
Right. So, you know, and my books, different books to highlight different things. I have one on discovering Ellis Island ancestors and one on tracing your ancestors in the cemetery and looking for death records and that kind of thing. So there are a different variety of books.
Okay, great. All right, now, Sharon, do you mind telling us how you got started and where your interest came from with this topic? And then we'll jump into the questions, other questions.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Personally, I got started when I was pretty young. I was about 9 or 10.
Hmm.
And most baby boomer people probably remember the soap opera called Dark Shadows.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So, well, in Dark Shadows, they did a lot of time traveling. They would go back to the past, and they would meet their ancestors and then come back to the future. And that's really how I got interested in the past and ancestors. And my family and I were living in California at the time, and we had gone back east to New York to visit with family and friends. And some friends of ours knew that I had an interest in Dark Shadows, so they took me to an old cemetery. And must have been fate, but there was a man there copying down headstone inscriptions. And he turned out to be a genealogist.
Oh,
and
gosh.
So he's the one who got me started, gave me a pedigree chart and a family group sheet, which we'll probably be talking about here in a few minutes and getting started.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got started. And unfortunately, boys became more interesting than dead relatives after a while, so genealogy got pushed aside until after I got married and had my daughter. And then I started really getting involved by going to society meetings and that sort of thing.
Okay, very good. All right, tell us how to get started, because there may be some beginners, but I'm sure there are also other people who, you know, have been doing this
sure.
for quite a while. But if you want to talk about how to get started, and then also apparently there's some forms
mm-hmm.
at the Family Tree Magazine website. So if you want to just kind of start off with that, that would be great.
Sure. Well, if you aren't as lucky to be in a cemetery and find a living genealogist there to help you get started, what we recommend you do is to first just take out a piece of notebook paper and start writing down what you know, the names of your parents, when they were born, where they were born, if you know when they were married. Just start jotting down information about your family, your parents, grandparents, whatever information you can get down. And then from there, you want to put it in kind of an organized form so that you can see the relationships. And genealogists use two forms in particular. One is called a pedigree chart, and that keeps track of your ancestors, your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, your great-great-grandparents. It looks like a family tree. And then the other form is what we call a family group sheet, and that keeps track of a couple and their children, so you can see all the children of that couple. And so once you start by just writing down what you know, or going through family papers at home, going through your papers at home to get that information, then you'll want to put it in an organized method by using one of these charts. Now, if you are so inclined and want to use a genealogy software program, those are widely available. Family Tree Maker is probably the most popular one. You can get that at Best Buy and any of the electronic stores, probably even, you know, Walmart and Target. And you can enter the data in there, and that will print out the forms for you. Or if you want to just do it by hand, you can go to FamilyTreeMagazine.com, and there are downloadable forms, blank forms, that you can print out and then fill in the information that way.
Okay, now do you have to join that site? Do you have to pay a fee, or is this free? Okay.
It is no. It's absolutely free. You can go on their site, and there are other sites as well besides. You know, I'm pushing Family Tree Magazine because that's who I write for, and I'm
sure.
a contributing editor for them. But there are plenty of other sites where you can download free forms as well. In fact, if you just put in pedigree chart in Google, you would probably come up with a lot of sites that would have the blank forms that you can just print out.
Okay, well, what would the benefit be to buying the program? Just a lot more information in the program, and stores it differently.
Right. The program comes with a little booklet that tells you how to get started, but a lot of people nowadays, especially since we're so computer-oriented, find that that's a quick and easy way to enter the data, and you can print out different types of forms very easily, whereas when we had to do it by hand the old-fashioned way, you were recording basically the same data on a pedigree chart and then on the family group sheet and then perhaps on another chart.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a software program, you enter the information once, and then you can tell the program what kind of chart you want to print out. Say you have information on your ancestors that goes back to the 1600s. Well, you can print a chart that starts with you and takes you all the way back to your ancestors, or you can print a chart that starts with the first ancestor in the 1600s and comes forward.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's just a matter of printing out different ways of looking at the same information.
Okay, and about how much are those programs if you were to buy one?
That's a good question.
I
have not priced them in a while. I understand. I think I'm just guessing. I don't use a software program, but I'm guessing they're around $35.
Okay, good.
They're very reasonable. They're not super expensive programs or anything like that. They're very reasonable.
Okay, and I would think that might be a fun way to do it, just to have all your information in one spot, too, which can keep us organized.
Exactly,
Yeah. Exactly.
As I always say, you know, I started doing this long before we had computers, and so I have everything handwritten, and I have offered to every single audience member who's tried to convince me to use a software program, I say, you know, if you would like to enter all this data into the software program, I'll be happy to use it.
Yes, that's right. That's really something to consider.
Right. I'd rather spend the time doing more new research than sitting there entering the data in.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. One of my cousins is very interested in this topic, and she has done everything by hand also.
Mm-hmm. So, yep, there's still a few of us out there.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You talk about the importance, of course, of talking to relatives, and I have to say one of the most memorable conversations, actually I wasn't even in the conversation, I was in the background listening, was when my son, and I guess he was only in middle school, interviewed my aunt, who was 88 at the time. He did a video interview with her about her family and, you know, what she recalls from at the very youngest. And, oh, I just thought, oh, boy, what a blessing to be able to sit here and mm-hmm. listen to this, because mm-hmm. had he not interviewed her, we never would have mm-hmm. had that information. So you want to talk to us a little bit about the importance of talking to the relatives and trying to get back as far as we can?
Absolutely, yes. Talking to relatives, especially the older relatives, is so important because we don't know how long we have them with us. And there's an old African saying that once an older person dies, a whole library of knowledge disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true with family history. Once older family members go, your family history is going with them. The records that we're going to talk about later and finding ancestors in records, those are going to be around for a long, long time. There are lots of ways that these are being preserved. But our older family members are not going to be around forever. So if you still have grandparents or maybe even great-grandparents, but probably not, but if you still have grandparents still alive, definitely take the time to talk with them either over the phone or better yet in person if you can, and record the conversation. Now, of course, you want to get genealogical information if you're just starting out. You want to get the names, dates, and places, you know, when was somebody born, where, when they got married, when, you know, that kind of thing. Keep in mind, though, that those kinds of details you're going to find in the records anyway,
mm-hmm.
And it's often stressful for an older person to try and remember all those details. So what I encourage people to do is get the skeleton information that you need to get to propel your research, but then spend more of the time talking about what life was like for them growing up. You know, we recently, when President-elect Obama just was talking in his speech about the 106 or 108-year-old woman who was voting,
right.
and all the things she has seen in her lifetime, imagine what a wealth of information this woman is. She has firsthand knowledge of history. And when she goes, yeah, we can read about it in the newspapers, we can read about it in the history books, but we have an eyewitness who was there at all these events. And so that's the kind of thing in talking to relatives, besides getting the details about our ancestors, getting them to talk about what was life like during the Depression, or what was life, you know, like when you heard about the attack on Pearl Harbor. Those kinds of things, again, we can read about them in the newspaper, but here we have an eyewitness who was there and heard and saw those things. So I really encourage talking to all the relatives you can, as soon as you can.
Right. Well, it's interesting because, you know, my kids are so intrigued by hearing our generation talk about the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we were there. And so this is the same, it's the same thing, just, you know, a little bit farther back in history. So
exactly.
Yeah. And you know, I think that I just like to mention that I know there are places, little small businesses that are doing videos
mm-hmm.
of, you know, the matriarchs and patriarchs of families. There's one
mm-hmm.
called Biographica in Sparks, Maryland. And, you know, while it's not exactly the same, it's another way of, you know, recording history. And you can give
sure.
them old photos and, you know, any kind of memorabilia that you have from, you know, years and years ago, and then, you know, they use all the technology incorporated
mm-hmm.
and include music from the era, et cetera, and then they have the interview, you know, with
mm-hmm.
the matriarch or patriarch, and it is just, I've seen some of them, not for someone in my family,
mm-hmm.
but through the company's website, and it's just really remarkable. So it's
absolutely.
Another great way.
Yeah, and if you're looking for someone in your area who can do that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
there's an organization called the Association of Personal Historians,
okay.
and you can click on your state and look for a personal historian in your state or your area who a lot of the personal historians specialize in this type of multimedia biography of a person. And so, and what a wonderful gift to give someone.
Yeah.
To have for a family reunion. So, yeah, there are lots of people around the country who specialize and do this kind of thing. Yeah.
And it's very different than us just going out and trying to do it on our own. It might be costly, but they know mm-hmm. the questions to ask, which
exactly.
I think is, you know, really makes a big mm-hmm. difference.
So, okay,
let's move on a little bit. Can
okay.
you tell us about the Family History Library
yeah.
and centers? Yeah.
Yeah, the Family History Library is the world's largest genealogical library. It's located in Salt Lake City, Utah, where I happen to live. And, in fact, I moved here because of the library. And it's part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or the Mormons. In their religion, they believe that they can, and I'm not LDS, so if I get this a little bit off, I hope mm-hmm. any LDS members listening will correct me. But they believe that they can baptize their ancestors after death and seal them with other family members. And that's part of their religion and why they started doing genealogy. Well, in the process, in gathering records to help their members complete their religious obligation, they opened up this absolutely wonderful library to all of us. It's absolutely free of charge. Anyone can go in there and do family history research. The library receives anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 visitors a day.
Mm.
And what they have there right now, besides books, you know, they have family histories and they have general histories and they have abstracted records, but they also have on microfilm records from all over the world. They have more than 2 million rolls of microfilm of records from all over the world. Now, that's not to say that they have every record for every time period for every country, but they do have a lot of information. For example, I was able to trace my Italian ancestry before I ever even went to Italy back to the 1700s just from using the microfilmed records from Italy at the Family History Library. So it's an absolutely wonderful resource. Now, again, in order to help not only their members but everybody else in genealogy, they have centers throughout the world. There are something like over 4,000 centers throughout the entire planet. And you can go to the Family History Library website, which is www.familysearch.org, and click on Library, and it will tell you where these centers are located. Almost everyone has a center near them. And from the center, you can borrow the microfilm from the library in Salt Lake City. Now, there is a cost to do that, but it's just the cost of postage. It's something like $4, $5. And you can order anything on microfilm from Utah to your local family history center and view those records there. Books you cannot get on interlibrary loan unless they've also been microfilmed. They do not lend their books out. But if that book also happens to be available on microfilm, you can get it that way. Plus, the Family History Library is undergoing a project to eventually digitize and put online all of those microfilmed records. It's a
wow.
huge, huge undertaking, and I just hope I live long enough to see it. But that they're in the process of doing that right now, and they've already got quite a few records online. And again, the Family History Library makes all of this available to people for free. There is no cost to use the website and the records that are on the website, and there's no cost to use the library. The only cost you have is if you're renting the microfilm from a family history center.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really great to learn all of that. And anything else about that before we move on?
Well, the main thing is with the Family History Library or the center, so many people, it's very sad to me when a client comes to me and, you know, they've hired me to write their family history. They've either already done research themselves or they've gotten their ancestor across the ocean and they hired a researcher in Italy or England or Ireland or wherever, and they've paid all this money to pay a researcher overseas when they didn't realize those records are right here in America. They could have researched them themselves.
Okay, gotcha.
So definitely check. The Family History Library's catalog is also online on their site. So you can go to their website and see all the resources that they have cataloged in their library. It's just incredible.
It's amazing what's out there for free now, and especially with the web. So let's talk about doing a little online searching.
Okay.
Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, like I said, there are more than 5 million family history and genealogy websites, so obviously it can be a little overwhelming. Excuse me.
Sure.
The sites you want to start with, there are both subscription sites where you pay a fee to use the databases and collection, and there are also free sites. The Family History Library, like I said, is a free site, so you can go there, and they have some records and databases and indexes already online that you can use there for free. Another free site is called RootsWeb.com, and RootsWeb.com is volunteer-driven. And that means that people all over the United States or in other countries have gone through and, say, have transcribed cemetery tombstones and then put them online, or they've transcribed records. They've gone to a county courthouse and they've transcribed wills or deeds or birth, marriage, and death records, and then put those online for other researchers to use. So RootsWeb.com is a completely free site, volunteer-driven. If you have the urge to go and transcribe a cemetery and contribute that, you can do that. So those are the first places I would suggest you go, is obviously go to the free sites first. Then a couple of the subscription sites, of course the most popular is Ancestry.com. And Ancestry.com has a wealth of records and databases online as well. Their subscription fee varies depending on whether you want to just join for a month or 3 months or a full year. And now you're going to ask me what the subscription fee for that is.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I don't know that either. but, again, it's online, so it's very easy to check, and obviously prices change, so I would rather you go to the website and see how much it costs rather than me tell you one thing and then you go on there and say and find out it's gone up or something. But I would say it's under $200 for your subscription to Ancestry.com.
Okay.
But they have records such as censuses, which we're going to talk about in a minute, because that's the backbone of genealogical research. They have some newspapers. They have some vital records, meaning births, marriages, and deaths. They have some land deeds. They have some tax records. They have some wills and inventories, World War I draft records. You know, it's really beneficial. There's a lot you can do for free on there just to kind of play around and see what's available. Where you get stopped and you have to pay the fee, you can even type in an ancestor's name, and that will tell you what databases that ancestor is in. But then beyond that, you've got to pay to get that information. So, you know, I highly encourage people to go on to Ancestry.com and just play around with it and see what's there. If you use a Family History Library in Salt Lake City or a Family History Center, they will subscribe to Ancestry.com. So you can use it for free by going to one of those repositories. And some public libraries also subscribe to it. So, again, and that's why I don't know what these fees are, because I just go to the Family History Library and use it for free.
Okay.
So you don't have to subscribe unless you want to use it in the comfort of your own home, of course. So that's one subscription site. Another one is simply called genealogy.com. And, again, it has similar content to Ancestry.com. It also has censuses, but it has other types of records. There's another database that I really like. It's called genealogybank.com, and that has newspapers. So that you can type in an ancestor's name and see if they appear, you know, looking if you're looking for their obituary, their marriage announcement, or something like that, you can go and look for that information. And then another site, and again, there are tons of them, but these are the main ones, is called Footnote. Yeah, this one is called Footnote.com. And there you can find military records and other sorts of documents as well. So there are bunches of these different subscription sites. And in fact, if you subscribe to all of them, you will probably not be able to make your house payment next month. So I do not suggest doing that. That's why I suggest go to a family history center or go to the public library, see what they have available for free before you start subscribing to some of these databases.
Right, right. So I can understand that. Yeah. But so I'm sure people are willing to spend a couple hundred dollars to join one of these sites because I'm sure the information, I mean, with it right at your fingertips, it's just worth it. Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're doing, you know, if you're one of those people who works best in the middle of the night or the wee hours of the morning and the library's not open, or you just are really involved in tracing your ancestry, absolutely. Ancestry.com or any one of them, it's well worth the money to subscribe to them because you're going to get a lot of information. You're going to be able to do a lot of legwork. Mm-hmm. Again, just like all that microfilm at the Family History Library, not everything is available online, and not all of the records are online. A lot of times it's just the database, like an index to the records, and it'll get you so far, but you want to go the extra step to get that original record. So, for example, you may be able to go to a website and find an index or a database of death records, but the actual death record is not online. Mm-hmm. So you want to get the basic information and then order the death record because there's more information on the actual record.
Okay. Now, we are just about halfway through our questions, so we might have to speed up a little bit because I'd like to have time for a couple questions.
Okay,
good. What about the census? I mean, you say, you know, to search censuses.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that. And is there a way to access them, you know, online and offline, how to do that?
Okay. First of all, a quick definition of what a census is. A census is an enumeration of the population. Censuses began being taken in this country in 1790 and have been taken every 10 years ever since. They are available to the public through 1930. After that, they're restricted by privacy laws, and every 72 years, a new census is released. So 72 years after the 1940 census was taken, that's when that census will be released to the public. They are available online through Ancestry.com, Genealogy.com. And again, some of the censuses are free. The 1880 census is free on the Family History Library website right now. Once they get all the censuses up there, they'll be free. But right now you have to be a subscriber to one of the databases. And again, you type in the ancestor's name and what you know about them to pull up the census information. Ideally, you want to start with the most recent census, meaning 1930, and work your way backwards. That's the mantra of genealogy. Start with yourself and work backwards in time so that you're not skipping generations. And what you will get from the census is a snapshot of that family on a particular day in that census year. It will give you the names of the father and mother and all the children, their ages. Depending on the census, it might give you their birth month and birth year. It will give you their occupation, where they were born, if they were born in a foreign country, when they immigrated to this country. Mm-hmm. For women, it'll tell you how many children were born to that woman and how many are still living. And again, it depends on the census year. Each census took different information. For example, in 1930, they asked people whether or not they had a radio. And that was the only census up to that time that asked people whether they had a radio set in their house. So each census tells a little bit different information. If you do not want to subscribe or don't have access to Ancestry.com, you can do it the old-fashioned way on microfilm. There are you can get the microfilm through a family history center, or there are National Archive branches throughout the United States where you can go, and they have all the censuses on microfilm. So there's two different ways to get them.
This is all amazing to me because I have never done any searching, and it seems like there's this whole other world out there. But how
there truly is.
The census, the whole thing that they filled out, basically. I mean, not the form, but the information, right?
Right, exactly. And for some of us baby boomers whose parents were born 1930 or by 1930, you can find your parents on the census, and then you go back to 1920, and you know, and you've got your grandparents, and you know, you just keep going back. It's absolutely, it is such a thrill the first time you find either parents or grandparents, and you see their names on the census. Nothing can beat that, as far as I'm concerned. It's really a thrill.
All right, now what about documenting what you find? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. As you go along, you want to take note, like say, for instance, you find your ancestors in the 1930 census. If you're finding them online, you want to make a printout of the whole census page so that you have the information of where they were in the 1930 census.
Mm-hmm.
As you gather information, write down where you got that information, because I promise you, as you get further into your research, you're going to find another record that conflicts with that information, and you're going to go back and scratch your head and say, okay, now this is different. Where did I get that piece of information from? Which one is most likely correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's real important to write down. Plus, you don't want to be duplicating a search unnecessarily. You know, if you've already checked this source, you don't want to go back and waste time checking it again when you could, you know, be checking something else. So write down where you got each piece of information just to keep yourself organized and keep yourself straight. And so if you come up with a conflicting information, you could say, oh, okay, well, I got this from this source, and this one may not be as reliable as this source. So that's why it's important to document what you find.
Okay, so, yeah, if you're printing forms, it won't necessarily have the web address across the bottom of the page. That's right. Okay, what about some of the pitfalls of online research? Are there any?
Okay, absolutely. Like I said, not everything is online. So, you know, there are going to be some records that you're going to have to write for, or you're going to have to look for in microfilm form, or some other means to get the actual record. So that's the first thing, is not everything is online. The other thing to remember is there is a lot of misinformation online. A lot of people get so excited about, you know, tracing their ancestors, you know, back to the 1500s, and they'll post their genealogy online, but they don't add the sources. And again, here's where a problem comes in. If that person didn't, you know, document where they got the information from, and you have conflicting information, you're going to wonder, okay, well, who's right? Where did they get their information from? So that's why you need to be looking at it and documenting it yourself, is to keep yourself straight. I have two what I think are really helpful articles for online searching on my website. If you go to SharonCarmack.com, on the left side, if you click on articles, there's one called Secrets of a Cyber Sleuth and one called The Tree Doctor, where I talk about researching online and some of the pitfalls to watch out for, some of the red flags to be looking for.
Ah, that's good information to know. Okay, very good. Let's see, what about, you suggest reading a good guidebook about genealogy. Any book in particular? I mean, of course, other than your own, but any specific ones of yours, you know? So.
Yes. Well, obviously, in the amount of time we have, as you could tell, there's a lot of information out there, and in the time that we have just to do this teleseminar, I can't possibly tell you everything there is to know and what's available for genealogy. So the book I always recommend, probably, and I think it's probably the best beginner guidebook, And even if you're not a beginner, if you've done some research, but you're just kind of, gee, I'm not sure where to go next or what to do next, Emily Kroom's Unpuzzling Your Past, and her last name is C-R-O-O-M, Emily Kroom's Unpuzzling Your Past, is probably the best overall guidebook on how to get started, what records are available, how you get access to those records, and more importantly, how to analyze and use those records. My books are more specific, like, you know, my book on Ellis Island is specifically for those who are researching their Ellis Island ancestors, or my book on cemetery research is specifically for records involving death, you know, death certificates, coroner's records, funeral home records, that kind of thing. So unfortunately, my one general guidebook is long out of print, so mm-hmm. I recommend Emily Kroom's Unpuzzling Your Past as the best book to get for that.
Okay, very good. All right, let's see. Let's move along. You share that there's more help available if you've been doing research for a while,
sure.
And, you know, you've kind of hit a brick wall and don't know how you can learn more.
Mm-hmm.
How can we go about that?
Okay, first of all, there probably is a local genealogical society in your area, and one of the best ways to get over brick walls, or if you've been doing research a while, is to network with other genealogists. And, you know, even though our family's eyes kind of glaze over when we start talking about dead ancestors and how excited we were that we got a death certificate in the mail, there are people who are like-minded, and so if you go to genealogical society meetings, you can network with those people and bounce ideas off them. There's also a fabulous guidebook by Marcia Rising called The Family Tree Problem Solver. And that's for when you truly have been doing a lot of genealogy and you're just at a brick wall and you don't know where to go. The Family Tree Problem Solver is a fabulous book for that because she talks about things like what happens if you find two men of the same name living in the same community, how do you separate them out, and you know, other obstacles that you'll run against in genealogy. So that's the book that I definitely recommend. It's a really good book. I refer to it a lot.
Okay, and I'm sure you can probably find it at Amazon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, are these books, like, pretty newly published, or even if they were written 5 years ago, they're still up to date?
The Family Tree Problem Solver came out maybe 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, so it's still pretty up to date.
Mm-hmm.
Unpuzzling Your Past, the most recent edition, again, that's within the last 5 years. Some of the websites may be not there anymore, but most of them still are.
Mm-hmm.
Genealogy is one of those things where especially the bigger websites like Roots Web and Ancestry and all those, they stick around. There may be newer ones out there, but that's why I suggest going to a genealogical society meeting and networking. Usually those meetings have programs every month or seminars once a year to help their members learn about new records, new websites that have been released. So, yeah, there are ways to do that, but for the core, regardless of whether it's up to date on websites, the core methods for researching, the core sources for researching are still going to be up to date on those books.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. All right. Let's see. How about people who are extremely busy? Like, you know, my interest mm-hmm. is peaked now, but I'm really busy. And
yeah.
I need my sleep, so it's not the kind of thing I could do in
right.
the middle of the night. But I bet people lose hours of sleep now that this information is available online.
Oh,
that
yeah.
you can just get wrapped up in
yes, <it's very laughs>
lose sleep over this. It sounds
yeah.
like it. Yeah.
It was addictive before we had the Internet. It's even more so now that we have the Internet. Yeah, if you've got a limited amount of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if you only have 15 minutes, a half hour on your lunch break, or, you know, after you put, you know, after you've got dinner done and cleaned up and you just have a half hour, you can still go online. That's the beauty of using the Internet and what's online. It takes me a fraction of the time to find somebody in the census now than it did on microfilm where I had to go to one microfilm for the index and then go to the next microfilm and crank through it and find the person. So the internet has become a real time saver. It can also be a real headache if you didn't hit your ancestor's name exactly the way it was spelled in the database, so you have to get kind of creative. But a lot of it you can find information very quickly, record it, and then the next day move on to the next thing. And that's one of the beauties of being a subscriber to these databases, is you don't have to go anywhere. You know, you can research if you're able to from work, because you can log on to your account from any computer. So it doesn't have to be your home computer. So on your lunch break, you can spend a half hour on Ancestry.com doing family history research, as well as doing it at home or in a library. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's ways to sneak in a few minutes here and there. But, again, it is really addictive.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure the programs give you ideas on keeping it organized. Do you have any articles on your site about that? Like, you know, once you start collecting all of this information, sure. Do you keep it organized by years or generations, or how do you do that?
Right. Well, I wrote a book on organizing your family history.
Ah, there you go. I didn't even know that.
Yes, organizing your family history search. Unfortunately, it is out of print right now.
Oh, okay.
We have a few copies left, I believe. I'm hoping to bring it back into print. Another publisher is interested in it, and I just have not yet had the time to update it because it needs updating. But again, the basic principles are the same. You can probably find used copies online or go to your library. If your library doesn't have Organizing Your Family History Search, you can get it on interlibrary loan. And that will help keep you organized. Plus, there is an article, a mini version on my website as well about organizing your family history. But if you can find the book, that would be the best thing, because I go into great detail on, you know, how to organize, how to keep all these people straight, how to, you know, create files and that kind of thing, what to take with you when you go on a research trip and that sort of thing.
Okay, and you also tell how to, when you say organized files, are you talking about mm-hmm. online files? Do you also share?
Right.
You know, I mean,
I'm sorry. That's why the book needs updating. When I wrote it, it was really, we were just on the cusp of starting to use computers and the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't a whole lot about organizing your stuff computer-wise. But regardless, we still have paper. You're still going to print out the census. You're still going to print out forms. You're still going to print out mm-hmm. vital records. And so the book is still good in that regard, because it talks about, okay, should you file by family groups, or should you file by individuals, or should you file by a numbering system? You know, how do you handle all this paper that you're going to be printing out? So in that regard, it's still a good source, but that's where it needs the updating, is I need to update it and talk about filing your stuff on the computer.
Okay. Now, do you have anything else to share before we see if anybody has any questions?
Not really. Again, the topic is so huge that, you know, we could talk for days, and there'd still be more to talk about. The main thing is to get started. and it's easy to get started by just simply writing down what you know, going through your family papers, talking to some relatives, going through their family papers with their permission, of course,
mm-hmm.
and just, even if that's all you can do, even if all you can do is talk to some relatives and write down what you know and put it in a file folder, at least you've got something of your family history written down for other people, you know, a child or a grandchild who wants to pick it up and get started with it. So if you can do nothing else, get that information together in one place and get started.
Yeah, well, this has really piqued my interest, because my dad is getting elderly and failing, and my father-in-law mm-hmm. has Alzheimer's, and And it's progressing, but he's still at a point where he really remembers the past. It's, you know, the whole short-term memory that's gone. So I think there's still a chance here for us to even just, you know, have some conversations with him and you know, make some notes. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, and I have a question that was sent in from someone who couldn't be on the call, and it has to do with the DNA. Has that started to play a part in finding people's relatives nowadays?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Of course, this is another complex topic we could spend a couple of days talking about. But basically, when you do DNA studies, what you are doing is you are linking up to other people that have a common ancestor. The DNA test cannot tell you who the common ancestor is, only that you have a common ancestor. And in that particular case, that's where traditional genealogical research comes in. And that's where the documentation comes in, so that if there are conflicts, you know, those can be resolved. So what you do is you do your traditional genealogical research so you know who your ancestors are, and then somebody else does the same thing. And then let's say you're at a brick wall and you're not sure, okay, am I related to this John Smith or that John Smith? And this guy says he thinks he's on this branch and I think I'm on this branch. The DNA then can tell you, okay, is there a common ancestor between these two people? And the other thing about DNA research, which, you know, when I was a baby genealogist and hearing about DNA, you know, you think, oh, my gosh, do we have to go dig up some, you know, relative to get the DNA? It doesn't really work that way. It, again, it works because you link yourself with other living people, documenting everybody's ancestry, and then seeing who the common ancestor is. Now, you can do that just through traditional research. I just recently discovered that I am Barack Obama's 10th cousin twice removed on his
side.
So, you know, we don't need DNA tests. I'm happy with the, you know, the paper trail. That'll work just fine for me.
That's amazing. That is really, I don't know how you figured that out, or was it something that you knew and had his name in your files already or no?
Well, fortunately, whenever somebody runs for president, the people at Ancestry and other organizations jump on the opportunity to trace the candidate's ancestry, and then they post it online. And so when they did that, I was looking through his ancestry, and I saw a common ancestor, one that I knew I had in my ancestry. And so then my husband, who does use a genealogical software program, Family Tree Maker, he plugged all the information in, and then we were able to print out the chart and figure out that I'm his 10th cousin twice removed. So I'm just waiting for the invitation to the family reunion. You know.
How fun.
I'm sure it'll be in the mail.
Right. Well, let me just get back to this DNA. If you do use it, is it expensive? I mean,
it depends on the DNA testing company and how many what they call markers you want tested.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really kind of confusing in some ways. There are several DNA genealogy testing sites, and in fact, if you go to Ancestry.com, they have a link to a genealogy DNA testing company. And you can go online and find prices for how many markers. You know, you can get a DNA test, you know, for just a couple $100s, or if you want more markers done, you know, you're going to spend, you know, $500, $1,000, whatever it is. So, yeah, but that's not something, you know, unless you, you know, I don't recommend it. I recommend doing the traditional research and then using DNA testing as a tool to help you with your research. You know, if you just do the DNA testing, they're going to be able to tell you, okay, you're you know, 10% Swedish and 20% this and you know, and whatever. And it's like, okay, but that doesn't tell
now
me
what
anything.
right is that available to the general public for genealogy research? It definitely
okay. And in fact, you should type in your surname in Google plus DNA study, There are a lot of websites now for different surnames that have started DNA studies. Like if you think you're related to, you know, a lot of people have in their family story that they're related to Pocahontas. Well, there's a DNA site for descendants of Pocahontas and that you can participate in.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's interesting. My daughter was just telling me that there is a Facebook group for people with our last name. And so, you know, more and more things are going to be popping up the time. It's really, it is really wonderful, though, that all of this information is there if you, you know, have the time to gather and record and just really work at it. So, honestly, I mean, when you started this, it was a major chore to find anything, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot more work. You know, you spent time writing letters and waiting weeks for the letters to be answered, if they ever were, and you had to go
travel.
Had to go to the courthouse, or you had to, go to the Family History Library to do the research. And, now it's become so much easier and quicker. That's not to say you still won't run against brick walls.
Right.
You do.
Right.
You still have challenges. You still have the same problems.
And if somebody does run against a brick wall, can they email you?
Well, they can email me.
Through your site?
I would be happy to tell. Yeah, they can go to my site, and I would be happy to discuss with them the fees and what it would cost and whether it's even realistic. Some brick walls are just not going to be overcome. You know, if you're tracing a John Smith and there are 14 of them in the county, you know, that may be one where it's like, let's work on another line.
Right.
Need to know this. There are some brick walls. And a lot of times it's simply because the records aren't there. You know, African Americans have a big challenge in tracing their ancestry because records were not as widely kept on slaves. Now, if your ancestors, your slave ancestors, happened to be owned by a large plantation where they kept record books of the slaves that were born and died, and those still exist, you've got a wonderful source.
Right.
But a lot of African Americans are not that fortunate. And so simply, you know, that's the problem. They just run out of the records.
Mm-hmm.
They just aren't there.
Right.
And
right.
So like Oprah, she had her DNA done to try and tell her from where in Africa her ancestors would have come from. So that's how DNA can help in that particular case.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, we are just about out of time. Let me just see if anyone on the call has a question. If you do, and you muted yourself, push *6. Does anybody have a question? Sometimes it takes people a couple seconds to do this. Okay, maybe not. Maybe not.
Okay.
Okay, well, I don't have anything else to add other than to mention your website again, which is Sharon Carmack, CARMACK.com. And, of course, we always like you to visit NABBW.com. And we have tons of articles on that site about all things Boomer Women at Midlife, and we welcome you to join that site and also our other site, which is BoomerWomenSpeak.com, and there we have a forum community with about 60 different forums where women post 24/7 about things that are near and dear to their hearts, and so we welcome you to visit any of those sites, and we want to thank you for being on the call, and feel free to email either myself or Sharon, and we'll do what we can to help you out. So thanks so much, and have a great day.
Thank you, Dotsie. I really appreciate it.
All righty. Thanks. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.